You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Welcome home, Radiant Creators. Today we're talking with Benny Wills, a truly inspiring individual. While you're listening to this, here's one to keep in mind. Your own self-realization is the greatest service you can render the world. Ramana Maharshi said that. Just keep it in mind. Your own self-realization is the greatest service you can render the world. And when you really get tapped into that, when you're doing it, you're going to realize that Benny is a real light shower. He's a way shower in doing that. Dig this, be inspired. I certainly was inspired talking with Benny, and I hope this interview truly inspires you also. Who is Benny Wills?
Sure. Well, Benny Wills is really just a guy who's trying to do his best in life and contribute when he can. But that aside, I'm a poet, and I create content on YouTube, particularly comedic content, and I'm a public speaker, and just an all-around good dude.
Oscar Wilde said, if you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh, otherwise they'll kill you.
Exactly. And
so with all the material that you're putting out, your poetry, which is on YouTube, people can check you out. There'll be links, you know, in the show notes. And, of course, in the Joy Camp work, I mean, you guys are really harnessing the power of satire to say things that maybe an editorial page can't say. Do you feel that you can get away with more and say more with satire, with the comedy of satire? Like, how come you have gone down that route with Joy Camp and I'd imagine really your own personal work?
Yeah, well, we sort of stumbled our way into it. I mean, I was studying to be an actor, and I was an actor for most of my life. I mean, I was born in Los Angeles and I grew up with actor parents, so I grew up around sets and backstage of plays, and for me it was a natural fit. I just knew I wanted to be a performer, mainly because as a kid I thought, oh, that looks really easy. You just have to pretend to be someone else. I can do that. So I decided I want to be an actor when I was about 7 years old, and then pursued it for the next 20 years. And simultaneous to that, I started asking bigger questions about reality and about life, and started, you know, revealing a lot of truths and uncomfortable truths, and felt like I wanted to contribute and help people also to understand that there was a much bigger picture and to be understood about reality and some of the evil forces at work. And at a certain point, my buddy Kevin and I teamed up, and he was studying to be a writer and an editor, and he also was wanting to contribute. And then we decided to make a video one day just for fun, just for us, really. And it was called Conspiracy Theorist PSA. It's the first video on our channel. And when we were watching the finished product, we both just knew that this was our way of contributing. We've been searching for years, maybe 5 or 6 years, for something that was ours, or something that felt good to participate in, to help people. And as soon as we made that one video, we knew what, you know, we knew that that was our role. To bring some humor to this scene, we thought that the, you know, the quote truth movement was lacking a sense of humor, and there was a void left behind from, you know, George Carlin and Bill Hicks and people like that. And we decided to try our hand at it, and we have done really well.
If there's anything I really miss about newspapers was the political satire that you'd see in the comics. It's not a lost art because it's happening other places. I think something changed when the newspaper went away and there was no longer this like beautiful satire that you could expect.
Yeah, because the newspapers are all have very particular narratives they like to spin.
After the stone tablet, there in the town crier, there was the newspaper.
Yeah, and I feel, and just natural and parody in general has shifted towards being strictly political, and it has a, you know, like Saturday Night Live, for instance, which I think used to be the go-to for political satire. While it's always leaned in a, you know, one direction a little bit more than another, it's now like so far down a political path that it's not it doesn't allow for much, you know, if you're not on that team, then you're not going to be included in the satire, or, you know, you're the, you know what I mean? You're the opposition, and it's not fair. It's not fair and balanced parody.
Yeah, parody definitely is political. And it's, you can, I think, sidestep the parody. You can kind of, you don't come from the left or right perspective. That's that's sort of amateurish. And a lot of people are stuck there. But you can, through the satire that you're doing, the work you're doing, kind of step behind that barrier that people have, which is an absolute barrier right now, and go hang out with them inside their fort and say, hey, you know, I like one of your videos, this conspiracy guy, where there's a presidential debate or the presidential candidate debate between Hillary and Trump, and all of a sudden conspiracy guy shows up in the middle of them and says, you know, ISIS isn't real, right?
Yeah.
It didn't have the left-right polarity. It just kind of carpet-bombed both of them, and I think helps people realize neither side's getting enlightened.
Yes, exactly. And each side wants your vote and wants your support and wants you to think the other side is wrong.
In a only slightly satire-ish video you guys did on Obamacare, it's called Obamacare in Real Life. But halfway through the video, this guy gets a slap.
I thought this was a free country.
It seems like that slap is something that you're trying to bring to people. Do you think people collectively just need that slap across the face when it comes to their delusions?
Yes, I do. And I don't even know if, I mean, we've thought about this a lot over the years, and our goal really isn't even to wake people up necessarily. It's just to get people to think and to get them to not be so intimidated by the ideas that we're presenting. You know, if there's, when there's humor, when something's presented in a humorous manner, it's much, you know, much more easy to digest and accept and consider. So, you know, we're not giving you an hour-long PowerPoint presentation on a subject to wake you up on the subject. We're just saying, here's a subject that you may or may not know about, care about, think about, or you've had a certain, you know, you have a certain idea about it, and here's a way to present it that makes it less scary, and you know, hopefully you'll consider it further from here.
Hey, getting to be a regular guest on the Boiler Room over at alternatecurrentradio.com. How'd you get connected with those guys, and are you having fun in the Boiler Room?
Through Jay Dyer. And Spore and Hesh have been my friends on Facebook, and we didn't really make contact but until recently. But Jay and I became friends last year. We both spoke at a conference in England together last June and then became friends, and he brought me into that group, and I would like to participate more, but I've been traveling a lot. I have a lot of speaking engagements, and I've also been going through some personal stuff, but I do like participating in that conversation, and they're a great group, and I found them through Jay.
So you were an actor. You were doing the actor path there, and you were an actor for like 25 years, and then you found that you had a moment you just couldn't do it anymore, and then you had to find something that was more in alignment with your, I guess, soul's purpose. So can you tell us about that transition?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, acting was my passion and my dream for, I mean, most of my life. And as I started to wake up, this was back in 2004, was when I really decided to commit myself to knowing the truth, all my paradigms started to crumble. And that was the last one standing, was this dream that I had, this pursuit, because I'd been going after it my whole life. It was the only path I knew. So I was living sort of in two worlds. I was doing, you know, intense research and flipping the script on everything I knew about reality and life in general and history and all that, while still following this actor path. I mean, I was in graduate school, you know, getting a master's degree in acting while learning about the Illuminati when I was, you know, 22 years old. And then I moved to LA after I graduated to, you know, pursue this career. And I did pretty well for a few years, but it really started to become, it became, especially after I created Joy Camp and, you know, sort of my confidence in myself as an individual, not just someone who was relying on a dream to come true. I don't know, acting really started to interfere with my integrity because I made most of my money, well, actually, no, all of my money doing commercials. And commercials pay really well when you can get the job, and it's highly competitive. But when you get the job, it can pay really well. And it started really interfering with my integrity as a person. And finally had the courage to walk away from it because it was too compromising for me. And I wanted to see what else was out there.
What's that bliss you connected to, that drive? Like, what keeps you doing it? Like, why haven't you gone back to acting?
Because I'm not afraid. If I went back to acting, it'd be because I'm afraid of what else I could do or what else is out there, or thinking that there's something lacking or that something will go wrong because I don't have the skills required or the experience required or the finances required to live a life without that acting career. So it would be a totally fear-based decision, and that's not an option. And I'm not afraid. I mean, I've definitely learned that I've proven to myself that I can try and fail at something and be okay. So I've learned to just, you know, take life in stride and take every challenge as an opportunity. And leaving LA was the best decision I could have made because I finally released something. I finally faced a fear, a big fear, and got away from something that I thought I needed. And I'm, again, doing just fine. In fact, I'm really flourishing in ways that I never was living in Los Angeles pursuing that career.
You are in Eastern Washington now? Washington?
Yep. I live in Eastern Washington in a travel trailer with my girlfriend.
I lived in Seattle for a lot of years. I think that leaving the big city, that's definitely a transformative wake-up moment. I like where you're living. I like Eastern Washington, and I lived west of the Five, as they call it, for many years. We were the fascist part of the state that controls the rest of it and such. Mm. Yeah, how's that transformation been? Because I know for me, going from Seattle to Phoenix or Scottsdale, Arizona, I got a resurgence of faith in humanity.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I leaving LA is a beast. LA is a metropolis. And it's also I want to be nice about it. It's where a lot of the propaganda is born and distributed, and in all forms, not just political, but all kinds of propaganda come from there. And there's an energy about the city that is can be really uncomfortable, and you can get sucked into it really easily. I mean, again, outside of the political stuff, there's a desperation, and there's this status obsession. And a lot of people a lot of people's dreams go to die there. And it's just a really strange place. So, and I was inundated with it. I mean, I spent most of my life there. So to break free from that and go to a place like Spokane, Washington, where it's a little simpler and doesn't move as fast a pace, it's, been really nice. And the people here are really genuine and friendly. And we've been received with open arms by some amazing people here that we didn't know that we would meet the people that we've met here when we moved here. And yeah, it's just a lot more calm. And it's been really very refreshing. And just to get out of that big city metropolis, Los Angeles energy into a place that's just a little more quiet.
I find that we really are porous. We sometimes like to think that we have our bubble of white New Age light and that the negativity cannot penetrate it. And, well, there's some truth to that. But we are like sandstone. We're very porous, and so is our energy. And where we live, we absorb that energy to some extent. Even if you might say, I do not intellectually or emotionally agree with this energy, still, it's like radio frequencies are going through you right now. And when you're in that city, it's almost like living there, where you live, that place is a vote. In some way, I felt like I was endorsing a sickness within humanity that didn't have a future and that I didn't want to be a part of, but yet every day I was basically my energy was being lent to it.
That's really well said. That's exactly how I felt living in Los Angeles, especially after I realized that I didn't need to be there and I still kept living there for a couple of years. I was like, what am I doing? Why am I sacrificing so much of myself to this place that I don't like? That's a huge part of the machine that is generating and perpetuating the problem. What am I doing here? So, yeah, getting out of that, I've so much more of my brain space, my energetic space, my heart space, whatever, all of it has opened up and is more accessible to me now, getting out of that environment.
I hear you. It's funny how place has an energy and place has a power. You know, when you go to different cities, you actually can see the energy of that place in the people.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think that you've been maybe following your bliss your whole life? Do you think that the future, like where you're at now, was always pulling you, even in the years that you weren't necessarily totally engaged with it?
Yeah, I do. I think that So when I first started, you know, asking bigger questions, I started keeping a synchronicity journal. And this is, again, back in 2004, because I was so blown away by coincidences, seeming coincidences and synchronicity. So I started logging them. And that's a part of life that, you know, no one can take away from me. No, science can't explain it. It's my relationship with the universe, with God, with the energy around me, whatever you want to call it. And I started to embrace it. So the more I developed that relationship of just trusting the signs and trusting myself and, you know, recognizing that when I am afraid of something or when there's something that makes me nervous or that I know I need to do, but I'm scared to do it. And that's the thing I need to do the most. I've developed this really healthy relationship with my own path and knowing when to walk away from something, knowing when to step into something, knowing when I need to confront something. And, you know, looking back on my life so far, I did acquire a lot of skills in the acting world, especially on stage. I mean, while I had dreams of being a movie star, I spent most of my life on stage. So I got really, really, really good at being in front of an audience on stage telling a story. And now that all makes sense because now I do live poetry that I perform and I speak in front of large audiences and I'm totally at ease and I'm able to take them on journeys with me and I do it well. I keep them engaged because I spent so much time and energy honing a craft to get to this point. So I totally think that this is all, you know, it all makes sense if you allow it to make sense. I think that's the case for everybody. If you can basically look at all the pieces and put them together, yeah, we are all always on some sort of path if you allow it in. So, you know, for a little while there, I was wondering if I had wasted my time pursuing the acting career because it was something I walked away from and I got in, you know, student loan debt as a result. And I, you know, put so much energy into something that I just quit, walked away from. But now it all makes sense. It's like, oh, I had to do all that so I could be doing what I'm doing now. So I totally think that I've been guided all along, but that guidance is only real because I embraced it and because I see everything as an opportunity to move forward and to learn from and to grow from. And so I definitely think that the path has been there all along and I just had to step onto it and now it's fully in place.
How are you staying in alignment with what guides you? There's a great book it's called Luminous Life. And I think it's fairly recent. It's by Jacob Lieberman. And he was in Sonia Barrett's movie, The Business of Disease. And this is a new book by him. And he talks about, like, literally there's this, well, an old saying that he doesn't talk about. This is like an old European saying that when you're inspired, when you're connected to the path, they used to say, God sees you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I always like that. What a great visualization. And then also they would say the hand is with him or her, and you think, oh, that's so badass. I got this big hand with me, you know? Mm. So how are you keeping in alignment?
Well, there's always room for improvement. I think that is also another key, is to always recognize that there's more room to grow. There's more to know. There's, you know, the more, again, it's sort of cliche, but the more that I think I know, the more I realize I don't know. So there's that sense of like, there's always something we can improve upon and always something we can get better at. I mean, for instance, I know that I have to develop a better practice of calming my mind, quieting down, and, you know, making sure that I stay grounded, because I also kind of have a tendency to get too wrapped up in my thoughts and be ungrounded and worry about things. And I know that I could apply more energy towards a practice of, you know, calming myself, whether that's meditation or prayer or something else. I know it's required now. So that's something that I'm working on. That said, my girlfriend and I, we practice gratitude every day. We've developed our own relationship with prayer, which is just giving thanks. I mean, at every meal we will say something, you know, express our gratitude for everything that we can think of in the moment. Just let that flow, let that gratitude flow through us. And that does seem to help big time for me, is remembering that, like, oh my gosh, in spite of all the day-to-day hustle bustle, I'm alive, you know, I'm alive and I'm in love and I have everything available to me and I have a roof over my head and I have food to eat and I have friends and family and et cetera, et cetera. I have all these things that I have to be grateful for in spite of whatever might be bothering me or annoying or something that's not going exactly right. And that seems to help big time. So while there's still room to improve, just having this established practice of gratitude has really been helpful in the last year.
I actually burn off this form of panic just by running in circles. So I just call it panic circles. And I figure, well, I'll at least run clockwise to be in harmony with the universe. And Freeman, the great longtime broadcaster, you know, Freeman Fly.
Freeman Fly?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, he makes the point of when he gets freaked out, he goes, am I okay right now? And so that's how you really bring yourself back into that moment. And you look around, he just goes, am I okay right now? And then I think also, like, we really are enough. And that's, I think, a hard focus for people to have, because like Neil Kramer, kind of modern day philosopher, he says, you know, your job on this planet really is just to bring your goodness to it. That's why you're here. And you have to ask yourself, you know, is my quiet presence, my quiet goodness enough? And it is. And that's all you need. And you're doing it. You are why you're here this moment. So I guess I'm just elaborating because I do that too. I'm like hardcore. Well, along with that, when you get to that place, when you wake up, I've always thought a very powerful scene in the movie The Matrix is when Neo wakes up and he's in the pod. You know, so kind of like divine providence sort of saw him, his fellowship in the Nebuchadnezzar, and went, okay, this guy is good. Let's wake him up. And he wakes up in that pod. He takes that red pill. And when you wake up in that pod and you look around and you see the rest of humanity and you freak out, you go, oh my God, look at the reality of all this. But then you've got your fellowship. You've got your crew on the Nebuchadnezzar. Do you continue to connect to kind of a higher order of being? The fellowship surrounding me just keeps getting better and better and better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you feel like your work kind of pulls you into places that you can't even believe that you find yourself?
As far as research or people or?
I think research and people.
Yeah, well, the community of people that I'm surrounded by, both in person and, you know, in the internet realm internationally, is pretty exquisite group of people. I feel very lucky and privileged to have the people in my life that I do. So in that regard, yeah, I have an amazing support network, both, again, interpersonally and beyond. And that comes from mainly mutual respect. And as far as research, gosh, well, you know, if I'm being honest, I've definitely been shifting my, like I said earlier, with my relationship with the universe and synchronicity. I'm allowing myself to call that God now and having a relationship with God. And that's an evolution of my own thinking and processing, and really going all the way from being an atheist as a teenager to being someone who is absolutely, you know, involved with a spiritual presence and a relationship with the force behind life and the miracle of existence, and sort of giving myself over to that more. And that brings a lot of solace and a lot of wonder, and also eases my mind a bit, because I can recognize that I don't need all the answers to everything all the time. It's okay to not know everything. And yeah, I don't know if that answers the question, but
as we progress, we have to get better, and we do get better at just saying, I don't know. And also, I think having paradoxical beliefs, like that great saying, it's all good and it sucks. You can actually see things from, you know, I know I'll oftentimes get called a hypocrite because I'll see things from the same thing from like 11 different angles, and I can validate them all and say it's great and not really hold on to any one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it seems that I like that, just being able to say you don't know, because I think it's something like the further we go, the more we have to become at home with that. And that's really mm-hmm. kind of putting the mind ego over on the shelf and really living mm-hmm. from your essence.
Yeah. And the rabbit hole is endless. I mean, if you're a person like me who wants to know the truth, you can be, I mean, I've been going down the rabbit hole now for 15 years, and there's no end in sight. I mean, it literally is bottomless. And there has to be points when you just say, you know what? I accept that I'm not going to get to the bottom of that today. And it's okay to not know, and it's okay to have conflicting beliefs and or no beliefs at all, or just take a breath and say, you know what, I'm alive, and that's all that really matters in this moment, and I'm good.
Emmanuel Velikovsky, he was one of the early believers or early people who did research that saw there being like magnetic pole reversal and such like this. So I guess I might be talking to the conspiracy guy now. You know, and he said that time has creative power. Falsehood cannot live for too long. Conspiracy guy, is he actually helping people see more truth? Because I know that something I battle with quite a lot is being hopeful and also hopeless. You know, I guess really life's about us, like your own spiritual, your own progression, your own growth, your own closeness to God, your own, you know, closeness to light and such. But there is the rest of humanity, and we have this kind of, we want to help them. There's this compassion, this empathy, and you know you're not perfect, but yet you feel like I have to do something. Like, how do you balance that between your work and also trying to help everyone else? And also, do you think there's hope for the world? Do you think people are getting smarter? It seems like a trap to even think about it.
I think there's definitely hope. If I thought it was hopeless, I wouldn't be doing anything that I'm doing. So I think there's definitely hope. And I think that, you know, there's a certain portion of people that get activated for whatever reason. And then it becomes a responsibility not to just yell at the, you know, people on the street about how messed up everything is, but to live by example and to show that we can be better than how we currently are. And I think that's, you know, again, if you want to consider that like a calling from God or something else, but it's this call to be good and to do good and to make the situation better. So I don't I'm certainly not hopeless, and I don't think that there's, and there's definitely hope to be found. What was the first part of your question?
There is, I guess, the notion of blackpilling these days, where people just give up on it all. Like, they red-pilled, and then they got discouraged, and then they just blackpill, and they say, well, let's just let it all burn. Let's just let everything fall apart. I'm not going to
engage. Well, then that's the reality you're going to get. I mean, that's what we get. Your thoughts become reality. So if you give up and you think that, you know, that there's no hope, and that, you know, if you just have that sort of, I don't want to sound new agey at all, because I'm not, but if you just adopt a negative outlook on everything, then you're allowing that reality to be manifested, period. That's what happens. So yeah, sure, the odds are against us in many ways as far as how big the obstacles are towards true freedom, but if we don't keep pursuing those, I'm an idealist. If I don't keep pursuing ideals, then what are we doing? Like, that's our goal, is to make this our own world, and then the world around us, the best it can possibly be. And if we don't do that, the moment we give up, then you are allowing that other force to win and to permeate through your reality and therefore all of reality. And why would you do that? So as far as you asked me about Conspiracy Guy and if it's helping, I know it's helping because people tell me it's helping. They write to me and they usually say, oh my gosh, that's me. That character is me. Oh my gosh, I've been there. I've been in that situation. I'm that person. And people also say, you know what? I was able to show your Conspiracy Guy chemtrails video to my friends who usually refuse to hear anything about, say, chemtrails, but they watched the video and they were laughing about it. So I was able to bridge the gap with that video. So I know it's helping just because I've gotten the feedback that it's helping. You know, I wish that it would take off on a bigger scale. That's been the most frustrating part of Joy Camp, is that it's been a hard thing to, you know, get to go really huge viral. Some of our videos have, but the videos that have gone really big have been taken down, which has been also very frustrating, but also shows that we're striking a chord, which is good. But yeah, I think that the work I'm doing is good, and especially the poetry in the past year, 2 years. I mean, the gratitude, the appreciation I receive from people now that I've stepped on a more of an individual path is amazing. I mean, people will send me paragraph long appreciation messages, emails, and whatnot, just expressing how much I've helped them. I mean, I've had now multiple people reach out to me and say they helped me, or I helped them rather, through suicidal moments of their life when they felt so alone and felt so dire about everything that they didn't know if there was any hope at all. And they found my work and it inspired them. And that's, you know, pretty incredible. I mean, pretty incredible message to receive from somebody. So I know that I know that what I'm doing is striking a chord and certain people, and some more than others, and it's that's the fuel for me to keep going when I get messages like that. When someone sends me a song saying, hey, I wrote this song because you inspired me, my gosh, that's ripple effect. I am influencing creation. And I, you know, it's, so yeah, it's working.
Truth is fun. As we follow that light, that book that I was referencing, Luminous Life, he was saying how Jacob Lieberman was saying how when you're in alignment with your purpose, with your soul, you can call it, with the universe, then literally you will see light. Mm-hmm. Like, where you're supposed to go will literally shine a light on you, because that's the universe seeing you and going, over here. Like, we know, we see and feel your vibe, and it's this way.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, like in the Celestine Prophecy, the Celestine Prophecy books, they used to call that following the insights. You would always see a light, and there would just be some guidance of where you're as to what you're supposed to do. And it gets fun. Truth is fun. I guess the further you go and the more you burn up, truth just becomes fun. Then you find that fellowship, and then you're just doing it. You're following your bliss. It seems like, I guess, the way we, you know, make the world a better place, ultimately, even though we oftentimes want this grand vision of what we're supposed to do, it's just to make ourselves a better person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's the key. I mean, it is the, we have to improve our own world to, if we want the rest of the world to change. I mean, it's almost too obvious, but it's just like I also think that one of the reasons why we don't see massive change throughout the world is that people are very unwilling to look at their own dark side, their own shadow, you know, their shadow self. They don't want to process that or really hold a mirror up to themselves. And therefore, you know, if you can't look at your own shadow, how can you look at the shadow of the world? So to me, it makes a lot of sense. So there, you know, if you're focusing all of your energy on changing the world, but not doing any work on yourself or making sure that you're applying everything you're learning to your own life, well, you're probably not going to get very far. Or it's going to be out of balance in some way. Like maybe you're going to be too much wanting the attention for it or something, or it's too ego driven. You want to be the person who tells you about this. You want to be the expert on this subject and you want to be known for that. It gets a little skewed because you're not, you know, checking yourself and making sure that you're doing it for the right reasons and applying. I mean, I apply all the truths I learned to my own life because I'm about making my life the best it can be and being the best person I can be. And then, you know, everything else is secondary.
Definitely working on the shadow, that's important, and it's something that a lot of people, or most, just don't take on. And that's why I've always really enjoyed when I see friends having nervous breakdowns. I go, oh, this is a great transformational moment. Now you can finally get started. And they're like, but I'm having a nervous breakdown, and they're suffering, and I'm sitting here looking at it like, this is beautiful. Oh, this is
exactly.
I'm so happy for you. This is so great. I'll cry with you. I'm so happy.
Yeah, I have a friend who put that in perspective. He said, if you're depressed, that's a good thing. That's your spiritual immune system telling you something needs to change. You know, something is not working. Now is an opportunity for you to change it up and to do better so that you're not depressed anymore. So sinking into the depression, you can use it as a way of saying, huh, that's my soul telling me you must change something about your situation or yourself.
Yeah, I love that spiritual immune system. It really is. Depression is that spiritual immune system kicking in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it is ultimately making ourselves better, and then our paths will become clear what we're supposed to do. It's funny. It reminds me of when I was a little kid, I grew up where it was very, very religious, and people were always, you know, wanting to get into heaven. And I always would think to myself, like, well, what the hell is, like, what's the point of heaven? Everybody's assholes, you know? Mm. Like, so mm-hmm. You get to heaven, like, none of us could be happy anyway, even if there was this heavenly place. It's like everybody's miserable here. What's going to be different there? What God tells mm-hmm. you, like God's this big, like, you know, angry person running the playground, keeping everyone from killing each other. It's like, it wouldn't even be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's focus on this reality too. And then if we get anything after this one, then bonus. But let's Perfection. Focus on what we have here. And making this the best it can possibly be. Let's make a heaven on earth.
Some of the videos that Joy Camp has done that have been really successful, is mm-hmm. that they got taken down. So are they actually not in circulation now? Or?
Yeah, a couple of them are not, unfortunately, because they had strikes against them. And I mean, they will be on some of the other alternative sites soon, I suppose. I haven't really thought about it recently, but yeah. They got taken down. We had a couple strikes on our account a couple years ago. We do award show videos, and they were the most popular things we put on our channel. And naturally, two of them got taken down, and we had to really cool it because we got threatened to have our whole channel taken down if we didn't acquiesce. So we've had to adjust from that. And also, ever since then, we've noticed that there's a little bit more, there's possibly more tampering going on with our channel. And especially now, YouTube is really becoming, it's not what it was. It's not as easy to get videos out there and to be circulated. There's an algorithm, and, you know, they really go after anything that is, quote, conspiracy related. And, yeah, so our most popular video we ever had was called Illuminati Puppet of the Year. And it was a Grammy Award show parody, and it was going viral. I mean, we had up to something like 300,000 views, and then we got shut down, and then they shut down another one of our videos, and they shut down another one of our videos recently called Stand Up to Cancer Causes for what they said was inappropriate content, which is interesting because all we're doing is telling people how to, you know, what steps they can take to precautionary steps they can take to avoid getting cancer so they don't have to deal with having cancer. And that video got taken down. So we're definitely like being monitored to some extent on YouTube, which is horribly frustrating.
What gets me is my feed is so damn boring, and I must be, you know, subscribed to hundreds of channels.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I'm like, what the crap? I used to love when I was working on stuff to be able to like to refresh my YouTube feed and be like, oh, badass, badass, badass. Oh, I've got hours of cool stuff to listen to. And now, you know, now maybe a cat video and something about the moon. It's just, it sucks. Yeah,
it's so basic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're on YouTube, of course. We have a YouTube channel, but also a BitChute channel. And I like BitChute as an alternative, like to put things up there also. Because even we get messed with on YouTube, and I'm like, come on. Like, nothing we do is any more offensive than a cat video. And I think how hard it must be for people because, you know, we fucking cuss and things. Like, we're not perfect. Mm-hmm. Not that cussing is not perfect or anything, but, like, when we see like us getting strikes and getting hassles on YouTube, I'm like, I can't even imagine what it must be like if you're truly putting out something edgy, some great satire like what you just referenced, because you virtually can't say anything and not do everything wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they'll get you if they want to get you, they'll get you. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, and the public will support it. The mainstream will support it because they think they're believing what they're being told, and that it's dangerous or it's hate speech or it's promoting some kind of conspiracy that is somehow dangerous. I don't know. And it's a scary time for censorship for sure. And we're seeing it firsthand. I was just telling my girlfriend last night how I also have probably 200 YouTube subscriptions, and I watch all alternative content. You know, maybe sometimes I'll watch an Avengers Endgame like spoiler teaser video because I also am also just a regular guy in some respects, but all my content is alternative, and yet I'm always recommended to watch like Seth Meyers talk about Donald Trump or Jimmy Kimmel or CNN. I'm like, why would they put CNN in my feed when I'm obviously not interested in CNN? Like, there's no way. I've never clicked on a CNN video. I don't watch any of this stuff yet. Here it is. So they're like trying to get me. They're trying to bait me with this stuff. And I'm sure that that's just an algorithm on YouTube. So if I'm getting it, that means most other people are getting it as well. And they don't know their audience. You know, that's just silly. But there's this push to get everyone on board with whatever the television and the mainstream media is, you know, putting out there, and silencing the rest, and also making it seem like the silencing is a good thing. And it's a scary precedent, and we're going to have to, and while we do have these alternative like BitChute, which we're also on, and DTube and Minds.com and all these things, which are great for us to have a place to, you know, back up our content on. But if there's no incentive for mainstream audience to leave YouTube and Facebook to go to these places, then they're not going to leave. So we have to find a way to get people over to these platforms that aren't being governed so strictly and make them want to be there. And that's, I think, the biggest challenge.
People thinking that silencing is good. Yeah, people who are really, you know, fighting for their own enslavement. That's one of the reasons I was really glad to leave Seattle, leave that city. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've been spiritually detoxing ever since, because I really, really felt, I had facts. I would interview people about their, you know, worldview and such. And for real, I think most of the population there, here's the deal. Okay. You got to be in a jail cell. You have to go to a work party every day, but you get a free iPod, a free iPad and Wi-Fi, and you have healthcare. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, so basically, jail cell, work party, free iPad, Wi-Fi, and you do get free healthcare. And we beat the shit out of you once in a while, randomly, just to keep you freaked out. That versus the fear of life and actually having to live some passion and make your life happen. So basically, guaranteed shit versus the possibility of success, but it's on you. I mean, most people would be like, well, what color is that jail cell? I mean, do we have to share bathrooms? And so it's funny, even with the social media, the power of the big corporations and what they're doing, which is just diabolical and evil, people shouldn't kid themselves. It's funny. It actually helps me spit out the black pill. I don't swallow it, because something I've learned recently with all the, well, a lot of the world's craziness and just doing my path, like what I'm supposed to do, is the future is not predictable. Not really. You know, if you could look right now and you could connect enough hooks to measure, you might see the future doesn't look good when it comes to the mainstream media, government collusion, social media used as its Twitter, blah, this horrible thing, this great conglomeration of evil. But the future is not predictable. Even though it might look like things aren't going to go so well, I truly believe that I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful. We're creating it. And the universe, this Earth here, it wouldn't have you, I humbly say me, and many others, Spore and Hesher, Alternate Current Radio, and such, and all these many other white blood cells wouldn't be showing up like Jay Dyer. They wouldn't be showing up. Why would a system that was just going to fail have any white blood cells? I don't think it would.
Agreed. Yep. I think this is like maybe the challenge of the times always, is that there's always, you know, we always have the opportunity to choose good or evil. And doesn't matter what generation you're a part of or where you are, you know, in the timeline, there's always that choice. And it's, you know, you can't eradicate evil energy completely, but you can harness it and you can balance it out. And I think that's the eternal test of humanity. And I think that maybe some people, I mean, as people understand some of these principles, and they're able to, govern reality in a way that we forget about that. I mean, I think that the whole progressive movement is not necessarily good. It's actually promoting some things that are pretty out of balance, like hedonism. I think this whole sexual freedom revolution is under the guise of being progressive, but it's actually pretty bad. Like we're not supposed to be so letting all of our sacred sexuality just be bursting out of us all the time, and it's not a good thing necessarily. So we have the option always of being more, you know, contained and restrained, but it's up to the individual, and we have to rein it back in and decide to be good and decide to be on a path of, you know, equilibrium and balance and harmony, and, you know, not just giving in to our lesser instincts and a pleasure seeking life, but actually having discipline and realizing that discipline brings evolution. And and to fight laziness in those regards, a lot of that is just laziness, you know, saying, oh, I think a lot of people who love government are like that. They're like, well, I really don't want to do it myself. So I'm just going to vote for somebody that'll enforce it and make sure everyone else does it so that I get my will, you know, enacted. And it's all just backwards. That's allowing that energy to persist.
Oh, yeah. Government has definitely become the bully on the playground that everybody's trying to pay off to beat up people they don't like.
Yeah, and that was a bit scattered of a thought, but I think hopefully you're able to follow. It's it's like there's good and there's evil, and we can align ourselves with either one. And a lot of times, evil doesn't look like evil. It just looks like apathy, or it looks like it's pleasure seeking. But you can really break it down to this or that. I don't think much in life is black and white, but I think that there is, in a real general sense, there is a frequency that you can align yourself to that can either propel you forward and propel the world forward, or propel yourself into despair and anxiety and laziness, and therefore a pretty uninteresting world, complacent world.
Oh, yeah, because that signal is beautiful. It is truth. It is good. And then you don't have to worry about what's right or wrong so much. You just, you know, you're tuned into your guidance and it is good and you're doing what you're supposed to. But yeah, what you're saying, it does remind me, it all comes down to really the sacredness of spirit. You are a source. You feel that sacred. You feel that your body is, and then you feel that other humans are, and you feel that the land is. Bringing goodness to the day is good enough, but you know that you also have a grander purpose that you're involved in, and you mm-hmm. see it unfolding around you, and it's beautiful. And it sounds like we're on our way.
Well, yeah. And all this, like you said, like there's a, you mentioned Jay and Hesher and Spore and all of us who are, you know, I'm only finding these people and you and anyone I meet along this journey and all the opportunities that I'm having. I wouldn't have any of this had, say, 9/11 not happened. You know, that was the thing that really like got me thinking more critically about reality. And had that not happened, this opportunity for growth for me, not saying that 9/11 is a good thing or that it should have happened, but it did. It was an opportunity for me to, you know, completely step away from a path that I was on and go into a much more uncertain, but you know, a better path in life that was more just in tune with my own integrity and my heart, that has borne fruit that I could not have had I stayed on the mainstream. You know, this is my dream. This is what I'm following path. So the evil woke me up to the good and woke me up to the people and all the opportunities available. So in a way, I'm, you know, that's what I mean. Like, I don't want any of these things to have happened, but they did represent an activation point for me and for many.
Understanding and living a paradox and being okay with it, where you realize that disaster is good. I mean, 9/11 was a huge wake up for me. Super powerful moment for me was like when I was a youngster, 17, I joined the military. I don't endorse such things. People don't do it. But I was a kid and I joined that, and I ended up amongst many exploits around the world. I was in Somalia when it went crazy. And I remember sitting on the beach and I was with a Somalian and his name was Nizam Mohammed and he spoke perfect English, and I'm watching Somalia basically get blown to shit. And I was like, man, does the world know what's happening? God. And he looked at me with this wise look and he says, you know, that's what it is about you people. You see something messed up and you think it just happened. You're sitting here like, oh, the world just got fucked up, and you want to tell your friends about it. And he's like, it was fucked up before George Washington was president. It's always been. And he was saying that in the midst of his country, of his city being blown to bits. And he had an aspect of humor about it, because I could tell he was a wise sage. And I was getting this blessing of realizing that we have to be at peace in the midst of hell for real.
Yeah, true. And that's not to endorse that. I mean, I don't want any of this to continue, but it's any of the bad stuff that is. But it's that's where like New Age can get it wrong, is that spiritual bypassing, right? Where you just pretend like it doesn't exist. And if you just put enough energy, like love energy, into the air, like everything will somehow dissolve. The bad stuff will dissolve or something. But, you know, there's, like I said, it's about harnessing it and staring it down and, you know, first calling a spade and saying, hey, I see this, it exists. I think that's one thing that we're failing to do as a species, is saying there's a real problem, and it's not just, you know, gender inequality here. There's a real problem. There are governing forces at work that are conditioning our minds into thinking that we're powerless and a slew of other things. So just basically addressing the darkness. And then we can move forward. I mean, there's always going to be someone or some people that are trying to control others in a way that is not healthy. And the more empowered we are, the more we can really teach ethics, morals, and principles and just goodness to our children, the more we can stand, you know, the more we can tame that energy and that aspect of the world and people who were wanting to rise to those positions of power and control.
Yeah, the wise don't seem to want to have that power.
So that's the point I always try to make with people. It's like, who else would want that job? Only someone who's doesn't really care about people would want to be in control of people.
Yeah.
Want to be governing the force, you know, it's just everything's so backwards. Like just watching, we watch the show Survivor. It's going to be open about that. We watched the show Survivor. And in the commercial breaks last night, it's so frustrating because every single commercial break, there is a prescription drug ad, at least one. And, you know, we all know that those commercials will tell you everything that's wrong with those medications, but it's like an afterthought at the end of the commercial. And most of these drugs we don't need anyway. I mean, actually all probably to some extent, but these drugs are there to solve problems that are created from a disharmonious body, which is basically from a disharmonious world. So then you'll have so last night, the specific example was they had a prescription drug commercial, then followed it with a gummy bear commercial, gummy bears, and then McDonald's, where you can get a donut sticks and coffee at McDonald's. So you probably wouldn't think you needed that prescription drug if you weren't indulging in things like gummy bears and donut sticks from McDonald's. So it's all right there in our faces. Who's behind that? Like whoever's producing those crappy donut sticks at McDonald's knows full well that they're unhealthy, but they're doing it anyway. They give it to you anyway. And people who make those prescription drugs know that they're horrible for your body and for your organs and for your well-being, but they're pushing it out there anyway. So as long as that's pure evil right there. That's a total detachment from any sort of empathetic reality.
And you see it in people's bodies. It really is a difficult one for me. We were at the Renaissance Festival here in Arizona the other weekend and just had to stop and be overtaken by the sublime shit that we were seeing at how sick humans are.
Yep.
You know, and you're just thinking like, at what point have you... Do you not know? Like, people have double humps now. Like, they have one hump because, like, they're in front of a computer. Now they're starting to have two humps. And people's heads are in, like, the middle of their chest and looking at their iPhone. They're wandering around. And there's a lot of obesity. And not all obesity is from eating. It can be from all kinds of hormone imbalances and all kinds of stuff. But it was just shocking, and I think I'm still reeling from that experience, actually, and just looking. Doesn't the herd, I call it a herd, but also doesn't each individual in that herd, don't they know they're sick? Doesn't anyone ever go, wow, my body, I'm like 28 years old, and I'm a step from death. I'm already type 2 diabetic, and is it just the way it is? Like, you're just totally helpless? That one gets me.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And now, of course, you're not allowed to if you call attention to someone's obesity, it's known as fat shaming. And there's this whole movement of like big and beautiful. And while some people's body types are bigger than others, being fat is a choice. I'm sorry. Maybe you have an addiction to the chemicals in the food or the soda or whatever that you're drinking, but it's a choice and it's unhealthy and we need to address it. For the sake of their life and for their overall health. And we're now not allowed to say that or talk about it because it is somehow insensitive, you know, is just backwards. It's all crazy.
Yeah. And
it should be a conversation like, hey, let's find a way to not be so obese. Let's address the issues. What's making someone obese? You know, if it's emotional, if it's food addiction, whatever. But now we're not even allowed to call attention to it. That's no problem.
If the body is not functioning, if the body is not working, then ultimately the mind is not working. It's like, what came first? The mind that doesn't realize the body is falling apart, or the falling apart body now is affecting the mind and it no longer works. I guess kind of both at the same time. But yeah, I would like people to have discernment, to have strength, to feel good, to be able to connect to their signal and really be their brilliance. And I saw all these people, and I'm like, man, this is a shame. These bulbs are turned way, 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 way down. And yeah, it's good not to be new agey and just focus on the positive, because this is all deliberate. This is not by chance. This is orchestrated. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's deliberate. Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
Oh, no, that I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah. Well, along with people who want to have the jobs, who come to power and such like that, I always think of Lord of the Rings and the rings and how the wise would never pick them up. Gandalf was like, hell no. Aragorn was like, nope, won't touch it. Sorry, Frodo, you're stuck with that thing. And even the goodness of the Hobbit eventually becomes Gollum. And if you look at it, if we look at our government, like the people especially who've been in the Senate for like over, I don't know, 400 to 800 years now, they look like Gollum, and they seem to live too long, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I can go down a bunch of conspiracy rabbit holes as to why they live so long, but I'm going to resist that urge.
It's a certain type of flesh that they eat that is really hard to get unless you go to certain islands and have a lot of
possible
connection. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, well, something along those lines.
Yeah. Thanks for being on the show. It's been great, and I think it's good. I really wanted to extract that inspiration that you are to help people get it and to be able to connect it to themselves and do it. As we sign off and let people know where they can get a hold of you and such, and it'll all be in the show notes. Joy Camp being successful. If it was as successful as you wanted it to be, what would it look like? Like, brainstorm that. What is all your dreams coming true with Joy Camp? What would it be? And where can people get a hold of you?
Well, it's a good question, because I'm constantly keeping myself in check with that. You know, we're at 20,000 subscribers on YouTube, and I really thought we'd have more than that by now. So I have to keep myself in check, because I get caught up in the numbers sometimes and I get frustrated. And then I have to remind myself of, wait a minute, because of Joy Camp, my life has completely bloomed in beautiful ways, and I travel all over the place, and I get to speak all over the place and perform, and I have the most amazing community, both again in my personal life and beyond that. So it's already given me so much. Why do I need a couple of numbers on my screen to make me happy? That said, I would love for anybody who likes Joy Camp to spread it around. I mean, I think that it's a team effort as far as getting content seen, especially now more than ever with the censorship stuff. But my goal would be to reach more people who need to see it. I think that the youth, I would love for the younger generation, the generation, because I'm at the very, I guess like a pioneer of the millennial generation. And now the generation behind me is coming into their own. They're teenagers, and, you know, they're getting older, and they're the generation that's only ever had the internet in their life. And they're the generation that's born around or after 9/11. I want to reach those people. So my dream would be to have a youth movement as far as consumption of my content goes. I also really want to, I'm in the process of creating a book, poetry book, and then hopefully several volumes after that. That will be in circulation, because I think that, you know, the poetry is first of all, it's my passion and people respond well to it, and I think it's as of this point in my life my greatest contribution, and because they really serve as breadcrumbs that will live on beyond this lifetime. So I want my poetry book to be circulated far and wide and to be very successful and popular, and I want more exposure, and not just because I need it for my ego, but because I think it's important, and I think that people can really benefit from it. And I think that, like we started off the show saying, parody, comedy, and anything creative really is a great way to reach people. So I want more emails coming to me, more messages from people saying, gosh, I hadn't thought about this subject until I saw your video, and boy, you really got me thinking about this, and thank you for that. And I was really confused about something, but then I saw something you said, and now it's changed. And again, not for my ego, but because I really do think it's good work that is accessible for people, that is as significant as someone giving a 6-hour lecture on a particular subject. I can condense and put put into a really thoughtful 3-minute poem or video that can reach people and then also becomes very shareable. So that's my long-winded, but those are some of my goals.
No, that is great stuff. And I can definitely attest to your stand-up is kick-ass. Your poetry, the spoken word on stage, it's great. You've really got that like Henry Rollins style, like
cool
presence, that force. It's very good. So keep that up because it's badass and I love it and I want to see more of it. So keep at it. And where can people get a hold of you?
Well, I'm really easy to find. We do want more, you know, as far, even though YouTube is, it is what it is. It is the best hub for content. So first and foremost, subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/joycamp. Subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff. In addition to that, you can find JoyCamp on Instagram, @joycamp_IG. Also on Twitter, on Facebook. We're on BitChute. We're on DTube and Minds.com. And my name is Benny Wills. You can find me on Facebook if you want to like friend me. And yeah, we're all over the place. So subscribe, comment, share, like, et cetera, do all that stuff. And, you know, if you want to reach out to me personally, I respond to every single message I get. So I'm available.
And it's definitely true. He does respond to every message because he even responded to mine. So there's proof.
True.
Thanks for listening to Radiant Creators. Check out more content at radiantcreators.com. If you like the show, give it a like. Share this. Comment. Keep the conversation going. You can also find us at alternatecurrentradio.com, where there's this show and a lot more.